April. Lowell, Gananoque, Ontario.
I get these headaches now because of my eye. Trying to use my eye, I think, is what's causing the headaches. Or maybe I'm still recovering from the concussions. Could be either or, really. I've been trying to rest here at the bed and breakfast in Gananoque. Casey's, their medic, she's been giving me lots of attention. I guess the people around here see me as closest to her in terms of age, so I guess that's why. Because I've been resting for a while now, I've had some time to go over the interviews, label the tapes, and better organize everything. Reread all the stuff in my notebooks about the wolves. The old stories I was writing. It's hard rereading stuff that you've written so long ago. Feels like somebody else wrote it. Did you know this is cottage country? Gananoque. It's scenic. Really scenic. Part of the Thousand Islands. Because apparently there's more than over 1,000 of them. Islands. In the St. Lawrence around here, the glaciers formed them. Casey gave me these pamphlets. Very comprehensive pamphlets. These islands have just been sitting here for thousands of years. Ever since the glaciers tore them up, leaving islands scattered all over the St. Lawrence. Scattered, but they're still here. I mean, the place is kind of touristy, but Jane would have liked the bed and breakfast. She would have liked the old-fashioned stove in the kitchen. I should sign the guestbook before I leave. If they have a guestbook. They should have a guestbook here. It's a bed and breakfast. Or maybe that's not the most important thing. I need to keep myself distracted again. I could start working on the wolf stories again. Except I'm a whole new person now. I should leave soon.
Les, 54, Gananoque, Ontario.
We've been working together here for a while now. There are other spots in town like this. People living together, working together. Now, with the snow gone, it makes things easier. We can just pop down the street real easy when we want to check up on each other. The winter was tough on everyone. The snow and everything. And then you'd eventually get around to checking on your neighbor or the old guy down the street, and they'd have gone missing in the night. That sort of thing. Casey's been a real godsend, because Bernice has got asthma and been having trouble breathing as of late. Because she'll get claustrophobia and panicked, and we've been having to raid people's houses for extra puffers and the like. Scary business. But now Bernice can go outside, and we have Casey checking in with her. So Bernice is going to be fine. I think we're going to try to make a go of it here for as long as we can. We had a group come through the other day, said they'd come from Toronto, and told us that Toronto was a real shit show. Lots of people left there, but people rioting and all of that foolishness. They said they were heading toward Montreal to see if things were any better there, but I guess they aren't, are they? Too bad you weren't here to tell them that when they came through. So, I guess if I were you, and if you really are that gung-ho and determined to keep traveling, then maybe you should try heading over to the States. You could see if things are any better over there. I doubt it, but that's really the only other option, I guess. If you follow the parkway east, you'll come to Thousand Islands Bridge. You can cross over to the States there. I have no idea what awaits you that way, but you could head over there, see what's going on. Maybe the States are better off than us, but I doubt it. Haven't seen the lights on over there since February, so I have no idea. There haven't been any planes flying overhead coming from that direction or anything. Come to think of it, I haven't seen a plane fly overhead since February or so, either. We have seen the lights, on occasion. No one really wants to talk about them, but we've seen those from time to time. Hovering over the water. Whatever they are. All purple and everything. UFOs, I imagine. Eh? What else could they be? Really? No one really wants to talk about them. But what else could they be, really? The sure Spitfire, not the Aurora Borealis. That's for damn sure. The sure Spitfire aren't human. It's like something out of an Ed Wood movie, you know? I mean, with Ed Wood, it wasn't ever just aliens, you know? It could never be something as simple as that with him. It had to be aliens and vampires and giant squids all rolled into one. Which is why I always thought his movies were creepier than your standard science fiction fare. I mean, his movies, sure, they looked more low-budget than most of the other movies of his day, but the ideas in them, the things that man came up with, the stories, he found some way of rolling them all together and making them creepier than your run-of-the-mill alien stuff. There weren't just aliens, but vampire aliens. A mix of the science fiction stuff with the occult stuff. And I think that was probably the thing he did best. His movies were shitty, but the ideas behind them could make your skin crawl. And I wish it weren't like this. But that's what this all feels like. Like we're stuck in an Ed Wood movie. That's exactly what it feels like. Like maybe some alien's gonna abduct me tonight. Or maybe it won't be some kind of alien. Maybe it'll be some kind of vampire instead. Or some kind of vampire alien. Or some kind of cosmic squid. They're not your regular run-of-the-mill aliens. You wait and see. It's going to be something weird. I wish we were being invaded by some kind of army or something, you know? Because then whatever was going to happen, it'd be over with by now. And people, all of us, we wouldn't be stuck inside of the real-life Ed Wood movie. I mean, this isn't hell, what's happening to us. We're not in hell. We're in an Ed Wood movie. You watch. You're going to cross that bridge, and you'll probably come face-to-face with zombie orangutans. It's going to be something weird like that, probably. Or mutant fish that can hypnotize people. Psychic robot crabs. Or deeply sadistic zebras. That's what we're dealing with here. And I don't even believe in any of those stupid things. I think we're dealing with something so weird, no one would even bother to make a movie out of it. I think we're dealing with something so wacky that Ed Wood probably wouldn't even put it in his movie. And that guy would put anything in his movie. I'm going to get ripped apart by robot crabs. You just watch. Something as dumb as psychic robot crabs. And I don't even eat seafood. I'm a landitarian.
Fay, 32, Selton, Ontario.
We're trying again, for a kid. Not because we're dumbasses or anything, but because that's how much faith we got in everything. In society and all that. This whole thing will right itself, turn itself around. People, they're gonna make their way through it and all that. And hopefully, if Randall can knock me up in the next week or so, well, 9 months or so from now, hospitals would be back up and running. You just wait and see. We got faith. We got faith because we have to have faith in the world, in everyone getting everything back on track. Because the alternative means, well, I mean, the alternative means what? No playoffs ever again? That's freaking dumb. We don't mind sitting them out for a year. That's fine. We're adults. We can be patient. Even though friggin' Maple Leafs are on a friggin' tear this year. And this year was probably going to be their year, but whatever. Whatever. We can wait until next season. When they get everything up and running again. I'll be watching the Leafs on the flat screen again, knocked up with our third kid. Everything will be running again, just like normal. And even though it's friggin' bull, what's happening right now, friggin' complete bullpucky, because this was the Leafs' friggin' year. Ask anybody who knows anything about hockey. Friggin' bookies were even projecting them as winners. Such friggin' bullpucky that this is the year the friggin' world decides to slime its underpants. Randall used to play before his knee got twisted to crap, and he pulled his ACL, ligaments, and that was it for him. And our two sons, we had them enrolled. They were playing for Gananoque, the community there, and when we showed up to the area that morning back in January to pick them up, and they just weren't there. Well, it's friggin' bull about the Leafs, playoffs being canceled because it was shaping up to be a beautiful season. It was shaping up to be our season. Me and Randall and Leo and Niels. Leo is the older one. We told him to keep an eye out for his younger brother. And I'd like to think that, when I think about it, how they may have gone or got taken or whatever, that Leo is near him. Near my baby boy, Neil. Looking out for him. My boy Leo is protecting my baby boy, Neil. Leo was such a good defenseman. And it's such friggin' bull because it was really shaping up to be our season and everything. We're doing all the methods and positions and everything, me and Randall. I'm putting him through the paces about it. That's how much faith I got in the world writing itself. You watch. I'll be pregnant. And 9 months from now, everything will be back to normal. We'll have another son and we'll call him Patrick. And we'll be parents again. Real actual parents again. And the Leafs, they'll still be in good shape. They're resilient. Something like this won't stop their momentum. You just watch. And they'll start winning. And it'll be a historic season for the Leafs, a championship season for the Leafs. And for us. For me and my man, Randall, and our new son, Patrick, just you watch. And Patrick. We'll name him Patrick Leo Neil Emerson. Because we won't forget either. We'll honor their memory. But everything will be back on track, too. And the Leafs will take an early leave, and it's going to be something to see, all right. So we can be adults. We can be patient for now and put the loss of the season behind us. Because it's all ground we can gain again next year. And like I said, I'm really putting Randall through the paces. All the positions, everything. Inside of that camper looks like a freaking hurricane hit it. Hurricane of all our fucking or lovemaking or whatever you want to call it. Harbinging. And then Patrick will be on the way, just you wait, 9 months from now. It's freaking bullpucky, but we're adults. And we can be patient about it. Get over the hump and have another baby boy. A hockey player. Another little hockey player like Neil or Leo. And everything will be back to normal and it'll feel just like we never lost anything. Like we never lost the season. Like we never lost my baby boy. Like we never lost my period. I'm going to be pregnant soon. You should see the positions I'm putting Randall through. We just got to hang on and be patient. And next thing you know, everything will be like it was. And all this crazy bullshit will just be a dream. Just some kind of crazy bad dream. And we'll have awoken from it and that'll be that. Hockey's like in our blood. Randall's a good man. Hockey players are good men. They're like warriors. They don't give up. He's been very good about all of the positions I'm putting him through. We'll get our season back. Us moving to this campground, this is just a temporary thing. We're doing what you might call regrouping right now. Families do this all the time. Regroup. Trick to regrouping is patience. Patience and faith. And knowing who you are. I might be pregnant already.
Wesley, 34, Thousand Islands Bridge, Ontario, USA.
Bruce and I? Here in the station, it can get pretty boring at times. There hasn't been so many people trying to cross as of late, so there's a lot of time left over to try and fill. We finished the crossword puzzles we brought with us a long time ago. We finished most of the books. I haven't finished Fyodor Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov yet, but to be honest, I've been having a hard time getting through it. He's real political. And to be honest, political seems so pointless nowadays. It's been quiet here. There's been what, Bruce? Maybe like 5 people we've seen in the past few weeks? We got enough time on our hands, is what I'm saying. We finished most of the books and crossword puzzles, so most of our reading now is repeat reading. Of the Playboys and Hustlers, mostly.
Miss March.
Yeah, no kidding. Miss March. She's this exotic lady who hasn't apparently shaved her bush. Bruce and I apparently react to her in the same way and everything. She's 22 years old, likes cycling, mountain climbing, and she's really not into guys who think that the whole world rotates around them. Their egos. Which kind of has been blowing our minds, because Bruce and I are exactly the polar opposite of that. Those ego guys that turn her off. Oh, Miss March. Bruce and I, we get that the world doesn't revolve around us. And if we were ever lucky enough to meet a girl with a bush like that, we'd be able to show her how we weren't like that. Those ego guys. We'd be total gentlemen. Ain't that right, Bruce?
Yeah.
First time I saw her, I had to double check the cover. I did a double check because I forgot that I was reading a Playboy because, well, she was showing her bush. And because she's exotic. Exotic. Showing her bush. Outside of Hustler. I mean, the world's moving fast nowadays, but it's not moving that fast. She's out of bounds. She's off limits for when we start up the competitions. Every once in a while, Bruce and I will start up a competition to help pass the time whenever we're real bored. Because we've already finished the crosswords, and I'm not reading any Dostoevsky. The first guy to blow his wad wins. We count to 3, and then it's every man for himself. And I got my technique down pretty good at this point. Well, Bruce here, he can't match me. What are you now, Bruce? 48 years old? My best time is 3 minutes and 34 seconds. But you let me look at Miss March while I'm doing it. One day I actually did it in 1 minute and 32 seconds. No bullshit. That girl makes me lose control, man. I can't even explain it. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure what it is about her that does it. You'd think maybe it was her bush, that nice hairy bush bristling out of her perfect skin of hers, or the perfect size of her breasts. They aren't big, but they are what you would call memorably unique. Her legs are fantastic, but it ain't something dumb and romantic sounding like her eyes either. I mean, she has nice eyes. Eyes that make you think that they got solar systems inside of them. But it ain't her eyes that make me shoot off so quick. It ain't that. So what makes me lose my load? It's the stuff about her information section that gets me going. How her turnoffs are guys that have egos that think that the whole world revolves around them. Because I'm not that guy. I don't ever want to be that guy. I'm the opposite of that guy, which makes me perfect for her. And she's obviously not just some jerk lady either. She mentions how she enjoys those Darren Aronofsky movies. So she must be fairly worldly, you know? And she has the bush. Like, she could have shaved for the photo shoot, but she didn't. And this is Playboy after all, so yeah. Kind of badass. Smart, badass, worldly girl. 2 minutes or less. Because I'm fucking amazing. Ask Bruce. Fucking Bruce. The fucking guy snores. In his sleep. And twitches. Like a terrier. He's asleep now, isn't he? Bruce! And he fell asleep on us. The girl in the magazine, Miss March. I'll never meet her now. I know that. I'm sitting here in this toll station with the last guy I worked with who was single and wanted to hole up here with me to wait this thing out. What's the difference? Me jerking off to the, in a world that's ending around me versus some life where I live without jacking off, never even knowing this girl existed in the first place. If I die alone, either way, what does it matter if I jerk off competitively with your coworker to pass the time? If I die alone, either way, what does it matter if you've completely stopped asking questions to people crossing the bridge? If both sides are fucked? I came here from the States. In these booths, you see how they're set up? We can only see the States through these windows, these booths. We can only look back the way we came. We sit in these booths looking back where we came from. I see a girl in a magazine. And it gets me off that I still have some kind of chance with her because she looks like where I came from, even if she is exotic. Everything's set up in these magazines for us to see her like that. Everything's set up so that we're always looking back. The record I set for coming is 1 minute and 32 seconds. And just between the two of us, I know I'll never be able to get back there again. I won't. But I keep looking back at it, you know? Looking back at the States.
Mara, 64, Gananoque, Ontario.
I'm fairly certain we're the last people left in Gananoque. We woke up 2 mornings ago and everyone else was just gone. Harold had a hard time with that. He was in a bit of shock until you got here. The people in the library, Casey and her group over at the bed and breakfast, we woke up Thursday morning and we just couldn't find anyone. And we didn't know where to go because we didn't know what had happened. Me and Harold had slept through the night. We can sleep through anything. We couldn't decide whether we should leave town or whether or not we should hide in our basement. So we didn't do either. We just kept going around as usual, pretending like everybody else was away on some kind of big trip or excursion. And then you showed up this morning, after having left us 2 weeks ago. And you've made Harold so happy. He's happier today than I've seen him in months. That's why he's gone off looking for some wine for us all to have for supper. Normally he just goes puttering off to the library or down to the wharf to look at the water. He's happy because you showed up again this morning. Lots of people have left us. That's why. Lots of people have left in the night when we weren't looking, when we were asleep. Harold and I. Sometimes I think we can sleep through anything. But no one's ever come back before. But you did. You came back. Maybe the others will too. That's why Harold insisted on the wine. After you left, Casey kept talking about you. You made quite the impact on her. I'm concerned. I'm concerned that every name I know in my head now is just a memory. Every name except mine, Harold's, and yours, Lowell. Lowell. Still here with us.
Harold, 64, Gananoque, Ontario.
I think we're dealing with some kind of interdimensional being, something that can phase out of this time dimension and into the next. That's why no one's ever seen them. Anytime some human gets close, the thing just phases out of our dimension into the next. That's why we never see them. They're around. We just don't see them. We can sense traces of them, but we never see the beasts ourselves. I think something's hopping into our world, grabbing people, then hopping back into their own dimension, taking us with them. Something that can jump through the binding laws of time and space. That's what I think is happening. Who knows why? I don't know why. I don't know the why to all of this, just the how. Phase shifters, dimension hoppers. I can't talk to Mara about this because she just tells me to cool my jets. Mara doesn't believe in anything she can't see. That can be pretty frustrating for a fellow like me who's just trying to come up with an explanation for it all. Why the hell this world doesn't exist anymore? I want to hope they're not cannibals. I hope they're not people eaters. Holy shit, people eaters. I just remembered that. My dad used to try and get me going when I was a kid. He'd start singing some song about purple people eaters. Long-legged purple people eaters. Long enough to step out of one world and into another. Jesus, I hope they don't eat people, because there have been a lot of real nice people who are gone now. I don't want to think of them as some people eater's lunch. So that Casey girl was your sister or your friend? The sunset through the trees is quite nice right now. The quiet is nice, too. We should get back to Mara. I'll carry your recording stuff if you grab the 2 cases of wine. Hopefully, those dimension hoppers leave us alone for the evening, or at least, I hope they leave us alone long enough to get drunk.
Harold and Mara, Gananoque, Ontario.
When I first saw him, I thought he was all right.
She had this look of terror on her face.
No.
At the junior high dance, this was back in the old days before lawsuits, the teachers had spread sawdust all across the floor of the gymnasium, so the floor was quite slippery.
Yes, I forgot about that.
Most of the nights, me and my buddies Tom and Ike and Hester, we were just running around like fools, sliding around in our sock feet.
You took your shoes off at the door. Everybody took their shoes off.
And we were sliding all around over the place, just having a time.
And me and the girls, Harriet and Velma and Kate, we were all sitting along the side, just watching everybody and talking about how everybody was dressed.
Watching us, our lot, me and my friends running around and making fools of ourselves.
I didn't even notice him. I didn't really know who he was. But Harriet, Velma, and Kate and I were too busy talking about everybody's dresses, and, you know.
I'm slipping and sliding around like some kind of maniac on the sawdust on the gymnasium floor.
Just another boy, dressed up by his mother.
They'd play these slow songs every now and again, in between the rounds of fast songs. And every 20 minutes or so, there'd be these slow songs.
We had our favorites, of course.
But so, during these slow songs, the teachers would get right angry at us. We kept sliding and running around, so we didn't have any choice. We had to quit horsing around when the slow songs came on.
And Harriet and Velma, they'd always have all the boys coming up to them, wanting to dance with them.
So we'd have to sit and wait during the slow songs, me and Tom and Ike and Hester.
They were a crew. We didn't pay any attention to them.
But it was so slow during the slow songs. We were just kids, could not figure out what to do with ourselves for the most part.
We were watching Harriet and Velma dancing away with their bows, because they really did have the pick of the litter. Velma was very pretty. Harriet, she was skinny as a rake.
So your gaze would inevitably wander.
Commenting on dresses and the whole while trying to figure out what made Harriet and Velma so special that they had all this activity going on around them.
I mean, out of the sheer agony of boredom, your gaze would wander.
It was probably their dresses. That caught people's eyes, you know. Because we knew Harriet and Velma, and we loved them. They were our best friends, those girls. But there was nothing special about them. In their brains or anything. Velma was never going to leave town. Harriet was pretty bad at French immersion.
And I don't know if she was aware of how she was looking at me or not.
I was looking at everyone. I was trying to figure out what made some people so special.
And our eyes met.
I realized I was looking at one of the boys that had been running around.
I'd come to the dance dedicated to raising hell and acting out, but when I saw her, when my eyes caught her eyes...
And I could only think, oh, shit.
Something inside of me that I didn't even know was there shot me out of my seat and across the gymnasium floor straight at her, directly at Mara in her dress, which was red with white bows.
My mother had been sewing it for months. She put so much time into this dress for me, for this dance.
And you find yourself in one of these waking time moments, one of those moments where everything is heightened, but you kind of feel like fate or something is intervening and you can't control yourself.
I didn't really hear him when he asked me at first.
She had to get me to repeat it.
The will you dance with me and with those eyes.
And the moment of terror, because she was fixated on me, I could tell, but I'd never done this before.
He held out his hand like a complete little gentleman, and you try saying no to that.
She took my hand, and it was the first time a girl holding my hand with any kind of intention behind it.
It was very nice of him to ask.
And we danced.
And we danced.
I didn't try to kiss her or anything.
He was a complete gentleman.
But I could feel her. Everything about her was electric. Every time her hip brushed mine or our chests touched.
I tried hard to keep the distancing appropriate.
Back then, for a slow dance, you'd be an appropriate distance apart.
But the feelings were still there.
You didn't need all that bumping and grinding you see nowadays on TV. People, just regular life and courtesy were enough back then. We didn't need the crutch of sensationalism that kids today seem to need to know what the fuck is happening.
He smelled like leather.
She smelled like vanilla.
I don't know how long the song was that we danced to.
Under 5 minutes, for sure.
But we were an item after that.
I forgot about whatever me and Tom and Ike and Hester had planned.
We kept looking at each other for the rest of the evening. I couldn't take my eyes off him.
She was the prettiest girl I'd ever seen. And I'd seen her before at school. After we danced, that's when I knew she was the prettiest girl I'd ever...
And the dance. After the dance, he would come to visit me.
At her house. Her father was never super keen about it.
And he proposed to me before graduation. And Harriet and Velma and Kate got so jealous.
I don't know how I knew. I just knew.
I didn't care. I just knew.
We just knew.
We just knew.
As much as he drives me crazy now.
He's clumsy. You can't take him into a store. He's too clumsy. He breaks things.
She thinks I should be able to read her mind or something.
He will stand in the middle of a room thinking about something. And you can't move him. You have to hit him to snap him out of it, just so you can get by him.
I keep forgetting to lock the door at night.
He doesn't ever lock the doors. Even now, I keep telling him, but he keeps forgetting.
She keeps reminding me, but...
He cannot keep it in his head. Not at all.
I'm working on it, though.
He used to be a lot worse.
I did. I was. Worse. She's keeping me on the ball.
He's good so long as you stay on him.
She's the only reason I'm still here, probably.
He's just so clumsy.
This wine has quite the kick to it, eh, Mara?
It's good.
Lowell looks like he's almost dozing off.
Well, let him rest, Harold. He's been on the road for days.
I'm certain the world could end and we'd be just the same.
There's no change in him.
These dimension hoppers, Bigfoots, whatever, they find us, they can't change us.
We'll always be the same.
We'll always be those kids on the dance floor.
That's what I tell him. That I always keep seeing him like the boy who...
I keep remembering her like that when our eyes first met.
Like we've carried the moment with us, through all of this. The moment we fell in love.
Bigfoots, whatever, we'll never change.
We'll always be us.
We'll always be us.
Dance partners.
Dance partners. I'm going to open another bottle of wine.
I don't know, Harold. You've drunk a lot already.
Not for us. Look at him.
Me? Oh, no, I'm...
You're worried about Casey?
No.
She was a very nice woman.
Jane.
Eh?
Jane.
Jane? Who's Jane?
Pour him another glass, Harold.
Okay, hon.
You just need to rest. You're overtired. All of the walking you've been doing on that leg, you just need to rest.
Take a break, kiddo. Have another drink.
Angus, 33, Highway 401, Ontario.
Not like I ain't used to losing shit, or being given shit and having it taken away. I appreciate you walking with me. For a ways, anyway. Used to work at a factory. Was working there for 10 years. Really liked the place. But one day we got this new manager and me and him didn't get along. So the next thing I knew, my name started getting brought up on the short end of his monthly reports to the boss. Then, for a while there, the job turned into a type of hell. Until I got fired. I wasn't surprised I got fired. I knew the instant my boss had taken sides with that new manager the first time. From that moment on, I knew my time in that place was limited. And I had been there 10 years. Worked my ass off for that company for 10 years. 10 years, though, is nothing when it comes to industry or business. Guys involved with business, they know that. They set that marker amongst themselves a long time ago. Some excuse was generated. They found some new numbers to track, and all of a sudden, some quota wasn't being met conveniently for this new manager who didn't like me. So I met my end that way. It was unceremonious. I didn't even empty my locker. I didn't care about the contents of the thing. Like I said, it's not like I ain't used to losing shit. So I moved on to some shittier job. Moved into a smaller apartment. Girlfriend left me because down wasn't one of the directions on her life compass. Kind of like that next job. Made a few friends. But the turnover rate was high. It was a hotel where I was working. They'd fire people for not wearing black socks sometimes. How does that go from there too, eventually? Same reason. Some guy in management found some new numbers to track, and I was not in line with their new quota. Moved on to a much shittier job. A bottle recycling place. People I worked with there didn't even want to make friends. Customers treated us with about as much respect as the dead mice stuck to the bottom of their bottles. Took on the odors of the place. Ended up smelling like beer even though I wasn't drinking. My hands get so black from the glass and shit smeared all over the bottles that I couldn't look at them end of the day. And then my till didn't add up one afternoon, so I got let go from that. Just some guy on the wrong side of the numbers who couldn't even get a reference letter from a previous employer. It was around then the world started falling apart. The whole business did not catch me off guard. I'd been prepared for constant decline. People prepared me for it. People had prepared me for a world with no people. And I don't mean to say this coldly or all emo-like. Along the way, my journey, my jobs, I cared about everything. Everything I was doing, all the people I worked with, I cared. But me caring has never ever translated into me keeping. That's what I've learned. That's what I know now. Me caring has never translated into me keeping. I walk this highway expecting less and less each day. And as such, occasionally I'm pleasantly surprised with what crosses my path. I appreciate you walking ways with me. I don't expect you to stay by my side. And if you do, I won't get attached to your presence either, promise.
Fortune of Wolves was written by Ryan Griffith. The series was produced by Big Noise Audio Collective and presented by Theatre New Brunswick. The show was directed by Ryan Griffith with help from Jillian Hansen. Recording, editing, and sound design by Matt Carter. Music for the series was created by Counting On Downstairs with additional scoring by Matt Carter. To learn more about the series and the artists involved, visit tnb.nb.ca or look for the Big Noise Audio Collective on Facebook. This episode featured Kat Hall as the Chief Archivist, Jason McIntyre as Lowell, Mark Kilfoyle as Les, Jennifer Hewell as Faye, John Riordan as Wesley, Matt Carter as Bruce, Clarissa Hurley as Mara, Mark Jarman as Harold, and Josh Linton as Angus. Next time on Fortune of Wolves.
I have for you this wallet. Taken from a very big man.
I miss watching people chugging beer out of funnels and getting into fights with each other because they're too drunk to understand what the other is saying.
The whole thought of it all, that these fish would reach a point in their life where they were all extinct.
Don't know how far it was into the night, but at some certain point, I just had this chill wash over me.
They disappear when you fill it with hot water.
I am worried that part of me has gone crazy.
Because this isn't how the world ends. We know better than that.